Well, it's a great pleasure to welcome all of you to our discussion today. Henry Kissinger used to talk about institutionalizing what was done in his time, and that's been the purpose of a little group which Lee Middleditch and others helped us create, the Associates of the Miller Center. And the associates are broken down into committees that deal with various aspects of our program. And there's an enormous concentration of talent in this community in terms of the background people bring to the various topics. Arnold Frutkin is a good example. He was in charge of international programs and international ties and relationships for NASA, and has helped us in many different ways. But he's chairman of our program committee in the Miller Center Associates. So it seems quite appropriate that he should introduce our speaker this morning.
Thank you, Ken. Some of you may have seen a charming little film called I Think My Girl. It's about a little girl who was the daughter of an undertaker. She fancied that she had each disease that took her father's successive clients off. And she would consult the family doctor about them. In one scene, she appears at the family doctor's place, and she says she thinks she is having trouble with her prostate. The doctor assures her it's her imagination. And she is so offended at being dismissed this way that she says she's going to seek a second opinion. And that is really what we're doing this morning and in the series of talks that we will have from representatives of the distinguished foreign press. We're going to get a second opinion because our own opinion of ourselves tends very often to go to the extremes of self-congratulation or self-flagellation. And it's very hard to find a balanced view. I find it difficult, given my limited reading, to find as balanced a view of our affairs as you find in de Tocqueville. But today we have a very professional press corps, a huge foreign press corps in Washington, very well placed to tell us how we look to others. And of course, that's the gift that we wanted God to give us. So it's a pleasure this morning to have the first of our speakers, Mr. Yoichi Kato, who is the political correspondent of Asahi Shimbun. And here I should apologize to him because our announcement said that Asahi Shimbun is a major Japanese newspaper. It is the major Japanese newspaper. I should also apologize, I suppose, that for the timing. I can't imagine a more difficult time in which to ask an observer to tell us about the American political scene. I mean, we've just had a president win an election in which he didn't run. And so it is a difficult time, but I think it will be therefore especially interesting to hear what Mr. Kato has to say about it. And it's a pleasure to introduce Mr. Kato.
Thank you very much. I'm very feel honored and happy to be here. Part of the reason is being based in Washington, D.C., it's really hard to find a good excuse to get out of it. And this has been a very good excuse. But as a matter of fact, it is really hard to... The reason why it's hard to get out of Washington, D.C. is there are so many things happening there. And since there aren't so many reporters in our bureau, I've been always tied up with catching up with whatever happened. Actually, on my way to this place this morning, I had to park the car for a while because my editor in Tokyo called me and asked me what happened to the successor to the Mr. Gingrich. And as you know, Mr. Cox withdrew his candidacy this morning. And so it virtually decided that Mr. Livingston is going to be the next Speaker of the House. So I had to make an arrangement from the car with my cell phone to file a story. I asked my colleague to, you know, sort of fill in my place and send a story, and then I'm here. So that's how my life goes. So, and I'm very happy to be here. It's a very beautiful setting out here, and I feel very honored. And today I would like to talk about scandal and politicians. And I came here April this year, and it's been 7 months to cover the politics here in the United States. But before that, I was in Tokyo, and I've been covering politics in Japan for an extensive period of time. And ever since I came over here, covering the scandal is basically my main job so far. So it's been very interesting for me to see how scandal affects or have impact on politics here in the United States. And I also had experience of covering scandals involved politicians back in Japan. So I would like to today present sort of comparison, sort of a comparative scandal studies in politics, and see what I can share with you out of this comparison. As I said, I'm a political correspondent in D.C., and my main responsibility includes basically domestic politics of the United States and Japan-U.S. bilateral relations, especially in the area of politics and security policies. So I'm basically a defense guy, a defense correspondent. And I was very much looking forward to writing a lot of stories on the U.S. strategy in Asia-Pacific after the Cold War and a new turn of Japan-U.S. security relations. But as I said, actually after I came here, what I've been writing is totally different. Yesterday, I checked with the database of my newspaper to find out what kind of stories I have been writing since I came over here. And I found out there were altogether 186 stories I wrote. And it's been about 7 months, so about 0.9 stories a day. And it's pretty productive, I think. And out of that 186, 66 stories were about Monica Lewinsky, and 20 were about Paula Jones. And that means altogether about 46% of all my stories I filed so far was on scandal. And stories on security policies are less than 40. I really feel like I have become a career scandal reporter now. And as a matter of fact, I hope I don't offend some of you, but I am the first reporter of my paper to put the word oral sex on the front page. And it's been quite an experience for me. And I have been, in order to fulfill my responsibility, I have to read not only the New York Times and Washington Post, but also supermarket tabloids like Star. Sometimes they are very quick to get the core of the story, like cigar story. So it's been quite different experience than I expected. But the reason why so many of my stories are on the president's sex scandal was not because I like it, but they are in high demand in Japan. Editors want them very much. And the reason why they are in such high demand is because, of course, it is about the president of the United States. But also, it is because for Japanese people, it's almost unbelievable and so hard to understand why it is that way, why it's going on that way. And for Japanese, it is unbelievable that the president of the United States had a sexual relationship with an intern inside of the White House. However he defined that sexual relationship it is. What is most unbelievable and hardest for Japanese to understand is not the fact that he had such a conduct, but the people in the United States did not turn their back to him. And the approval rating of the president did not go down in spite of those scandal stories. This is the main topic I write, the why the approval ratings haven't gone down. And I wrote repeatedly why, based on a number of interviews with a lot of political analysts, strategists, pollsters, but my editor in Tokyo never satisfied and constantly kept on asking me to write more because he said the Japanese people just didn't understand. And the way I explained was basically as follows. I usually touch upon the 3 points, like number one, good economy. People are satisfied with the life as it is, and they don't think it is necessary to look up to politicians or president to change their life. And number two, so they think the president is doing his job in a satisfactory manner. And number two, people are tired of scandal stories, mainly because of the enormous amount of reporting by the media. People are just tired of hearing the scandals. And number three, what they call spin control by the White House, or damage control by the White House. Basically what they do is first lower the expectation and minimize the damage. I thought it was fascinating when I saw the way the White House managed the crisis right before the release of the videotape of the president deposition. I think many of you have read it, but the New York Times and Washington Post reported that within that tape there is a sequence where footage where the president got so upset with the questions that which was posed to him, and left the room and didn't come back for an hour and stayed in the clinic. And so I wrote that story too and turned out to be wrong. And so, you know, people thought this is going to be a devastating story. And after this saw, people say this wasn't bad at all. And this is a very typical way of controlling the damage by the White House. And the same technique was implemented, I think, when they faced the voting of the impeachment inquiry in the House. And there's a lot of leaking in the American press that the number of the defectors from the Democratic Party would exceed 50. There are some reports which indicated it's going to be 100. And so when it turned out that it's only 31, the people thought it wasn't too bad. And so that's the way the White House is really controlling minimizing the damage. And this contributes why the White House is surviving. And those are the explanations that I've been giving to the Japanese readers, but they still don't understand. And the public opinion vis-a-vis the impeachment process, which is now underway, is also a big mystery for Japanese. And the most typical reaction I got from Japan was, why can he still stay in the office? Why don't American people kick him out of the office? Then I have to explain further the political structure and dynamism in the United States, especially the difference between parliamentary democracy, which Japan has, and the presidency that this country has. In Japan, sex scandal or womanizing could be a fatal scandal for elected officials. The most well-known case may be the one of former Prime Minister Uno, who was forced out of his office in 1989, only after he served for 69 days. Uno succeeded Takeshita, Prime Minister Takeshita, who had to resign in that year, 1989, because of a harsh criticism over widespread corruption among the government officials and politicians, and also extreme unpopularity because of the introduction of a new consumption tax that year. As a matter of fact, his approval rating went down to only 7% at the lowest, right before his resignation. And right after the Uno inauguration, a former geisha girl spoke up in an interview with a news magazine and accused him, saying that I was bought for 300,000 yen, it's about $2,500. I was bought for $2,500 per month. And Japanese media drew a parallel to a sex scandal that forced former Senator Gary Hart to withdraw from the presidential U.S. presidential race in 1988. And the Washington Post, New York Times, all those mainstream media also reported this scandal pretty extensively from Tokyo. And so he was forced to resign after 69 days. And less than 1 month after his resignation, the chief cabinet secretary of the next cabinet also announced his resignation because of his sexual relationship with a bar hostess. When the story was revealed by also some news magazines. And he decided to resign because otherwise he won't be able to save the administration that he served. And at that time, the prime minister was Mr. Kaifu, and Kaifu commented when he heard that his chief cabinet secretary was resigning that that's not the way it was, but I guess the time has changed. And as he suggests, this was a turning point of scandal reporting in Japan. There has been, as Mr. Kaifu said, indicated that there has been a kind of unwritten rule or understanding among the political reporters that they do not report on sexual relationship of the politicians, even though there was a sort of a century-old tradition that politicians or successful businessmen keep mistresses and sometimes maintain a sort of second family. And the mainstream media, like my newspaper, has really reported on that kind of story at all. And this was the time when we started to write about sexual scandal also. And with this change of media, how media reports sex scandal had a great impact on the way the people in the Japanese public reacted to this kind of scandal. And so sex scandal, with this change of the media reporting, the sex scandal cannot be hidden from the public eyes anymore and has to face a very strong criticism from the public, and especially female voters. And once a story comes out, all those politicians involved had to resign to save the administration that they served or the political party they belonged to. And more recently, the Prime Minister Hashimoto, the Prime Minister that we had before the incumbent Obuchi, the Prime Minister Hashimoto allegedly had an affair with a Chinese woman who was said to be a spy of a Chinese government. And this story was also widely spread, and I think American media also reported. And there was even some questions posed to him, the Prime Minister, at the floor of the Diet. And he admitted to some social encounter with that woman, but denied any sexual relationship, nor leaking any classified information. And the allegation was never proved, and Hashimoto survived. And I was in charge of the Prime Minister's office at that time as a political reporter back in Japan. And we ran an extensive background research on what has really happened, because we had to get ready for the time when the story really breaks. We didn't really report on this scandal at all, since it wasn't really founded, but we had to be ready. And the conclusion was that there was a strong possibility that he had an affair with that lady, and the anti-espionage section of Japanese police had closely followed his relationship with that woman. They, is this on the record or off the record?
Well, you'll be the first one to see the text. In other words, we'll send you the text. You can delete anything you want to delete.
Okay. It is said, then, it is said that the police even taped the conversation that he had with that woman. And we did not obtain any hard evidence so that he violated any law, so the story never get printed. In Japan, as you know, the Prime Minister and the Cabinet Ministers, Cabinet Members, are elected by the members of the Diet. And this means that those elected officials are pretty much under control of the ruling party, which is now Liberal Democratic Party, LDP. And they will be automatically forced to quit as soon as the ruling party decides to replace him or her. And there is no direct involvement of the public in choosing the Prime Minister nor the Cabinet members. And that's how it works. And LDP is, as I said, is very afraid of the negative impact on public opinion when this kind of scandal breaks. And especially they are very afraid of women who are, on the whole, very sensitive to this kind of scandals and have a very strong influence over the outcome of the elections. And political parties cannot afford to keep scandal-tainted politicians if they really wanted to win the elections. And now there is a very strong taboo in Japan that public figures get involved in an extramarital sexual relationship. It's almost fatal. There's no way that they can get away with it. And so this is the situation that we have surrounding the sexual scandals in Japan. And because of this situation in Japan, majority of the Japanese people just cannot understand what's going on in the United States right now. And majority of the Japanese people thought that the President Clinton had to resign, no choice but to resign, when the Monica Lewinsky story came out in January this year. And the perception, this kind of perception gap still exists, and a lot of Japanese people are at a loss how to grasp what is going on here. And it is true of the outcome of the midterm elections. It's really hard to understand for the Japanese people why the Democrats gained seats while they have such a big scandal of the president. Of course, I could explain it. It was a backlash. There's a number of ways to explain it, but still the people in Japan just can't get it. And from now on, I have to write the story on impeachment too. It seems that impeachment is not going anywhere. So I am going to have a hard time to explaining Japanese people why it is the way it is. And as a reporter, I have been having a hard time to really report this story straight. And as a political reporter, I always try to find the right storyline which explains the sort of big trends in politics. That means whether the administration survives or the President Clinton goes down with a scandal. And I've been writing ever since I came over here that he's not going to go down. And I've been right so far. But as I said, it makes my work much harder to really explain in the way that the Japanese people understand. And even as I see, the American medias are fluctuating from one way to the other in reporting this story. And since I've been having a hard time to really find out what's the core of this story, I've been, as I said, interviewing a number of people, a number of distinguished journalists here. And I interviewed, for example, Mr. David Broder of the Washington Post. And he was a very impressive person, and I was very impressed with his comments. But what he said was that American people are just withholding the judgment, and the approval rating, the fact that the approval ratings haven't gone down doesn't mean that they're supporting the president, but they are just withholding the judgment. It was before, this interview was before the release of all those materials that Ken Starr submitted to the House. But anyway, that was the explanation by Mr. Broder, and I thought, you know, maybe this is right. And I wrote that also, but it turned to be wrong. And so I think even a distinguished journalist in Japan, in the United States, are having a hard time to really understand what is going on, and much less a small-time reporter from Japan like me. And so what is being here in Japan through this scandal is the moral standard of the American people and its application in politics. As I said, people in Japan are at a loss to understand what happened in the United States from the incident of Gary Hart in 1988 to Bill Clinton 1998, these 10 years. And as I described, in Japan, the way the media report the sexual scandal is very quickly changing. But the value standard among the Japanese people has not changed so much. And as a close ally, Japan and the United States, both governments always stress that we share the fundamental values such as democracy in market economy, freedom, and that constitutes the basis of our close relationship. I think it is true. But this whole story about President Clinton's scandal did not enhance our sense of sharing values. And these days, Japanese people see more difference in basic values with American people than we share in common. Thank you very much.
Who would like to begin the discussion? Is that Al Fernbach?
I wonder if you wrote a story for your paper on the personality of the president, the fact that he has come up from his early in his youth fighting adversity. Some adversity he makes for himself, but nonetheless he seems to enjoy almost meeting adversity and overcoming it, and that this may be an element in the picture that is not present so much in Japanese politics.
Yes, I have written several stories about his personal history, how he was raised up, and what kind of political career he has come through, and how he is regarded in Washington, D.C. Actually, he's, I suppose, regarded as an outsider, not like George Bush or those people who are treated as an insider, and he's been having a hard time to really get along with those, what they call Washington insiders. And so, as First Lady said once, that it's all because that we are from Arkansas, and I think that's one of the very important element. And as I said, I have written several stories to explain that aspect too.
Yes.
Yes. Very good.
Don't worry, I hope that's understood. May I ask my question now, Reverend Nash? What is the future role of the Japan Self-Defense Force in peacekeeping operations, PKOs, and what will the economic situation in Japan, what effect will it have on the support of military bases, by U.S. bases in Japan?
I think that's a very good question. Actually, I'm going after that story. For the PKO, I think we have already established a framework to participate in peacekeeping operations of the United Nations, limiting only to the logistical operations. We are not committing our soldiers to combat situation because we have, as all of you know, have a constitutional limitation where we're not allowed to send troops for a combat purpose abroad. And so, but since it is regarded very important to make a contribution in peacekeeping operations of the United Nations, so there is a very strong, fierce discussion between the leading party and the opposition party in the Diet, whether we should send the troops abroad, even if it's a logistical purpose. But as a result, the government decided to send it, and that kind of new framework is established. And so this kind of commitment will keep on going as it is. And as for the second questions, the impact of Asian economic crisis on security situations in Asia Pacific is very serious. It's not seen very clearly, but a lot of countries canceled their plan of modernizing their military equipment or procurement, and that sometimes breaks the balance that they have among themselves and invite sometimes cause some kind of skirmish. And so I personally think the presence of U.S. forces in Asia-Pacific is very important, and its significance is getting more and more important to keep that balance when the Asian countries are having a really hard time to keep their forces in shape. And Japan is also suffering a very bad economic crisis, as you know. And our government, Japanese government, is not so effective as the rest of the world expect us to be. And so we are still struggling with the bad loan issued of the banks, and it would take at least a couple of years before I think the Japanese economy picks up again. And this has also very serious impact on Japanese cooperation, Japanese contribution to the host, what we call host nation support of U.S. forces, which are stationed in Japan. And there is an agreement concluded between two governments as for the host nation support, which types of support we are going to provide, to what extent. And this existing agreement will last until year 2000. And after that, we have to, both government has to come up with, we have, both government has to renew the agreement. And probably next year, the negotiation will start. But I am very sure this is going to be a very hard, tough negotiation between two governments. And of course, it depends on the situation, especially Korean Peninsula at that time. But since in Japan, the economy will not be so good at the time, and the how much of financial burden each people have is a good, it's a big political issue, not just those defense spending, but also social security and pension and those things. So the financial burden on each Japanese citizen is something that politicians has to really face from now on. And in that sense, this host nation support and Japanese contribution would be a very big issue. And it hasn't surfaced yet, but officials at the Pentagon are very worried about it.
Mr. Vandenberg.
Kato, yes, you have obviously also written about the American-Japanese trade relationship. And for a while, this was very much on the front burner. And why wasn't Japan opening its markets more wider for America, for American products than it had done so far? Right now, that seems to have sort of subsided. Is this because Japan is really opening, or is this thing on hold, and are we just concentrating on other things?
I have to apologize, but I am not an economic writer, so I'm not an expert in this field. But what I can tell you is it seems that there is a definition of being open between Japan and the United States. And I talked with the chairman of American Chamber of Commerce in Tokyo, Mr. Glenn Fukushima. He's a very prominent person in Japan and also in Beltway area, as you know. He once worked for USTR, I suppose. And he never criticizes Japan for being not open. He says that if you look at the market in Japan, there are many American companies which are very successful in penetrating Japanese market, like Kentucky Fried Chicken, or McDonald's. There are a number of businesses which are really successful in Japan. And what Mr. Fukushima told me was you need to really find where you can really come in and how. And you can't expect the equality of the result, but as long as equality of opportunity is guaranteed, there's not too much to complain. And I'm not so sure whether this is the right way to describe the situation right now. As I said at the outset, that I'm not an economic reporter, but I just wanted to tell you that not even within even among Americans, there are some people who don't think that the Japanese market is closed. So, and if I interview bureaucrats of the Japanese government, you can imagine they can give you tons of statistics to show that the Japanese market is open, and I can't judge. I'm sorry.
We're told very often that the U.S. is expected to assume the mantle of world leadership, and the president is often judged on whether or not he's advancing us in world leadership. In Japan, is U.S. world leadership something that would be expected, or is it something that might be resented?
We have actually run a special series of stories on unipolar system of the world after Cold War. And that the story was planned because there was a certain amount of resentment among the Japanese people against the U.S. leadership. And it is true that some people in Japan don't like to be bossed around by the United States. And some people think that the United States are going too far than they should in trying to lead the rest of the world. But at the same time, as I explained about peacekeeping operations, what Japan can do is very limited. And without the existence of the United States or presence of U.S. forces, as I explained, the present system in the world cannot be maintained. And that is also very well and widely understood by the Japanese people. And so I should say it is ambivalent among the Japanese people about the leadership of the United States, but the well-informed intellectuals or policymakers in Japan understand very well that it is still indispensable for the United States to assume that kind of leadership role. But the question being asked and being discussed now is, what about the future? Is that the way it should be, and is that the way we should maintain or we should try to keep? And as for that question, there are many answers, and it hasn't been any established answers to that yet. But there are lots of discussion going on, and also it has also very close relationship to the discussion of what kind of role Japan should assume in the world, and including the military role. Should we just limit ourselves to the situation in the framework that we have right now, or should we in the future try to change the framework and expand it? And if so, what should be the restriction that we should impose on ourselves. And that kind of discussion is going on in Japan.
A question. I think you put your finger on a fundamental point in saying that the Japanese don't understand why Mr. Clinton's popularity hasn't disappeared. When you pointed out that we elect our president directly, he's elected for 4 years, and I think the American people decided that they don't want to throw this president out. Whereas in the parliamentary system, it's much easier to do that. You simply replace a president with somebody else who is more acceptable. And I think that people simply decided that this scandal isn't big enough to remove the election of 1996. That's in effect what they would have to do is to say, we were wrong in 96 to elect this man.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that since he got a majority in 96 that most people would say we were wrong. There's a political element of that, of course, but I think that's an important factor. Now, my question is, since you're a specialist on security affairs, how do you personally, I'm always conscious of asking a journalist his personal opinion because I happen to be a bit of one myself, what is your personal opinion about what's going on in North Korea? And how does that affect Japan's security? And if you have time, if you would also say, what's your opinion, your personal opinion about what's going on in China?
If I know what's going on in North Korea, I would write it. it's a most difficult question. But with what information I have at hand right now, and also what little experience I have with North Korea. I think what is happening in North Korea right now is are really aging quickly, and they are reaching the point where they can't really use them anymore in the actual combat situation. And that will be a sort of a incentive for the leader to go into adventurism. And the other element is the deterioration of the economy, as you all know. And there are some reports that some people do not even... There's a big sort of a movement within the country to reduce the number of meals from 3 to 2. Maybe it's good for diet though. But anyway, so and what is really drawing attention in Japan right now about North Korea is a recent launch of a missile over Japan, and also the discovery of the underground suspect facility. Those two incidents are sending a pretty clear signal that they are trying to do something fishy, something that we don't know. And especially that missile launch send a very clear signal that they are militarily capable to attack Japan. And I personally think it is now very important for Japan to come up with the measures to prevent that kind of incident happen, and at the same time to be ready if such a launch is actually conducted. And in that case, for that reason, I personally think it has some sense to invest our asset in TMD, Theater Missile Defense Program. Of course, there are lots of
ambiguities surrounding that system, and there is a big discussion going on in Japan whether it's worthwhile to invest technology and financial asset to that program. But in order to, if there is no other alternatives to be ready for that kind of adventurism by North Korea, I think it is necessary, and it's worthwhile to try it. But what I have to point out is in Japan, there is the sense of crisis in Japan is rather low. It is also true of the sense of crisis for the economic crisis. It is because the politicians don't like to put a very harsh picture in front of the people. They would rather say, oh, this is not too bad, so we can still go on. And for the North Korean situation, too, it is true of North Korean situation, and there isn't really, I would say, enough sense of crisis in Japan, among the Japanese public, to drive the Japanese government to come up with probably necessary measures. And this is also said about the legislation to implement what we call defense guidelines. There is a set of guidelines established between, agreed upon between Japan and the United States back in 1996, and it is targeted at not explicitly at North Korea, but actually it's for the preparation for some kind of crisis in areas surrounding Japan. That's the term they use, areas surrounding Japan, but it's actually North Korea. And there is legislation planned already in Japan by Japanese government to implement the guidelines with the United States, but the Diet deliberation is not going as quickly as both government wishes, and so if something happens in North Korea today or tomorrow, I can say as a matter of fact that Japan would not be able to function or extend military cooperation to the U.S. forces as stipulated in the guidelines. And I am very worried that such situation would cause a strong criticism or dissatisfaction among the American public. And but as I said, there's not much political momentum in Japan right now to proceed with those measures. So it's not going. So that's the way it is right now. I think it's dangerous.
Relationship between the two countries has bettered or worsened from last year?
I think it's deteriorated. I think it's been deteriorating. Two reasons. One is because of the economy. Economic situation is it's deteriorating, and there's a clear understanding on both sides that Japanese government failed in management of economic policy, and the situation has been getting getting worse and worse as time goes by. So I think that's one of the reasons why. And the United States government is pretty much critical and also not satisfied at all by the way the Japanese government handles the policy. And so there's a pretty harsh, nasty exchange of words between both the government officials. And so and that kind of exchange, by being reported by the, you know, our media, would also hurt the sentiment among the public toward each country. And so that's a sort of a negative spiral going on. And I'm pretty much worried about it too. And the other reason is the lack of leadership in Japan. And a year ago, we had Prime Minister Hashimoto. And even though he has his own limit of capabilities and shortcomings, and he himself is not a type of person who managed a big faction within LDP and lead the country based on his power to lead the party. As I said, as parliamentary democracy, you need to have a very strong support from the leading party. So Hashimoto's case was very exceptional, but he managed it to be a pretty very powerful leader by his personal capability, and he was pretty successful in that sense. And he succeeded in reaffirming the Japanese Security Alliance, and he also made a deal with Russian President Yeltsin to conclude the peace treaty between two countries by the year 2000. And those are main accomplishments he made during his term, and it was pretty impressive. Even though he made a very fatal mistake in economic management. Compared with him, the incumbent prime minister we have, Mr. Obuchi, is the totally opposite in the sort of type as a politician. He is a strong leader within the party. He has managing the largest faction in the leading LDP, Liberal Democratic Party, and he's trying to lead the country based on his support from the party. But he is not, he does not have a character or personality to impress the foreign leaders. So he always depends on bureaucrats to come up with any policy or any plans. And so his leadership is not very visible. And as a matter of fact, his economic measures that he's been implementing has not received very well by the United States and other rest of the world. And not like Hashimoto, he hasn't really accomplished anything outstanding in foreign policy either. So he's not very good at maintaining a good relationship with the United States either. I think that the bureaucrats in, and also the leaders in American government are, I think, trying to, are having a hard time trying to, what Obuchi is trying to do.
Who are the leaders in the United States whom in the last 25, 40 years, Japanese have respected most? Our speaker Wednesday is the biographer of Dean Acheson, and Acheson played a very central role in promoting the ties with Japan. We're now learning in recent books that have come out. But who are a few of the leaders that Japanese respect?
I think it depends on the position each person takes. So it's really hard to say the Japanese in general. For example, some people think the president, the Reagan, was very. Some people say he accomplished very much in enhancing our security relations, along with based on the relationship, very close relationship with Prime Minister Nakasone. And but some people see it negatively, his accomplishment. And so it's rather difficult to say in general terms.
Well, we thank you very much. We've come to the adjournment time, but we very much appreciate your joining us.
Thank you very much.
It was good enough.
It was very good.